You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Women to Watch is an intimate look into the lives of prominent and influential women leaders from around the world and the challenges they faced on their journey. It's the real story behind her title. Join us every week to hear more stories about women from around the world and in your own communities at womentowatch.net. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another week of Women to Watch. I'm Sue Rocco. My guest this week will be Dr. Beth Sanborn. And Dr. Sanborn spent 33 years as a police officer and juvenile detective in suburban Philadelphia. And she's now the school safety coordinator for Montgomery County in PA. She has a great story about starting young, thinking she was going to go in one direction, and then learning that she was very much passionate about helping young people. Don't forget to stay with us during the breaks, where you'll hear from our exclusive watch team of corporate partners. And I invite you always to subscribe to our YouTube channel at W2W Media. So now I'm very honored and excited to welcome to the show Beth Sanborn. Dr. Beth Sanborn, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
It's great to see you. I appreciate your time. I know how very busy you are day to day, and you have a very big job as the school safety coordinator for Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. I want to give our listeners and viewers a little bit of a sense of where you came from and what led you to go into the police force. And I wanted to start with this question because a little bird told me when you were little, the first aspiration you had was to work with sharks.
Yeah, that's so true. That's where I saw my life going.
And how did that come? Where did that come from? I hope not watching Jaws.
I don't know. I wish I knew where that fascination came from, but I just found them to be so majestic and so beautiful and powerful. And I knew that's what I wanted my life's work to be. I was going to be a marine biologist on a boat in the middle of the ocean. And then I actually stepped on a boat and I realized how seasick I get.
That wouldn't work. Well, you just our listeners and viewers know you grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Yes, I haven't moved very far from home.
Right, nor have I. So we're kind of neighbors, and I know what it's like to grow up in the suburbs of Philadelphia. But talk to me a little bit about your upbringing. I know you are the youngest of two. You grew up in a Jewish family.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about how you spent your time as a young girl. I know you played sports.
Oh my gosh, boy, did I. So I have one older brother, my older brother, BJ, very active in the Jewish community. He is a partner in his international accounting firm. I mean, I don't know if you can tell or not, but I'm super proud of my big brother. And I wanted to be just like him. And he was an athlete. So because he was an athlete, then I was an athlete. So our childhood was spent playing in the backyard and with all the neighborhood kids. It was like the United Nations of kids. We had friends from India and friends from Korea, and our neighborhood was just so eclectic. And we were so blended that we all rode our bikes together and played hockey together and t-ball and tag. And we just spent our time outside being kids and having fun.
Yeah. Tell, what neighborhood, remind me, did you grow up in?
So I was in Glenside.
Okay.
In Cheltenham Township, not the Abington Glenside. No, no. Abington and Cheltenham, I think we're still rivals. But
Yes.
every so often I do drive past the old house and I'm super disappointed because my parents planted a tree when I was born, and that was my tree. And the last time I drove past, my tree had been cut down.
Oh no.
I know. How disappointing.
Oh, no.
But that's okay because I've continued to grow and I've continued to flourish. So despite the lack of the tree, it doesn't interfere with my ability to grow.
Maybe you sneak in the middle of the night and plant a new tree. I guess that would be illegal, something you would not do. Listen, I want to share a quote, something that you shared with me, because I'm always so appreciative when my guests are candid about, you know, the insecurities and struggles they had growing up. And you said, although athletic and quite determined, I always felt a little bit insecure and inferior. And I wanted to know if that led to your desire to work with kids and help them kind of get through their own problems.
Is it safe to answer that by saying, I don't know, but at the end, it turned out that was probably what made me most successful. So listen, I have a lot of achievements, and I don't mean to sound snooty or conceited. I achieve a lot because I set my mind to it, I'm determined, and I will succeed if I set my mind to it, not to repeat myself. But I've just always wanted to set myself apart from the rest and for positive reasons. So when I was in policing, I did it because I wanted to help. I wanted to be the person who made others' day better because they encountered me. But I very quickly realized that that's not what policing is about. But when I got the opportunity to work as a school resource officer, so to be a uniformed police officer working with kids, I realized that's where I could have the most impact for my community, and that's where I could do the most good. And then when I walked through the school and I felt all of those insecurities despite all of my accomplishments, I mean, boy, you want to talk about imposter syndrome? Like, this girl right here has it. But when I started working with my kids, I was able to empathize with their feelings of insecurity and not fitting in and just feeling uncomfortable in their skin and not knowing how to express themselves. And I was able to draw upon all of my experiences to be able to bond and connect with my students to help them develop their own coping skills and to help find their voice.
Now, let me ask you, how were your parents, your family supportive of your decision to become a police officer? It's not the safest job.
It isn't. And I remember breaking the news. So I came from a predominantly single family household. My parents divorced when I was 5. My brother was 10. It was a difficult time for us. You know, it's traumatizing. It's difficult for a kid to have your family break apart. And, you know, we survived. We did what we needed to do. I never felt as if I missed out. I never felt as if I were lacking. I still always felt supported. But I do remember sharing the information that I wanted to go to the police academy and I wanted to be a police officer. And of course, my family immediately suspected that I was going to work in Philadelphia. And they were worried about my safety and whether or not I would make it home okay. And I said, no, but there's so much more out there. And fast forward some, I was fortunate enough and determined enough. I became a police officer when I was 21 years old. So 21 with minimal life experience. And here I am with a badge and a gun, a set of keys, don't get hurt, kid, and don't get lost. And I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to fix the world?
Did you graduate early? Because I know you have multiple degrees. You have a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate in public administration. How did you start at 21?
So I finished my college degree early. I finished in 3.5 years, and I used that time to put myself through the police academy, and then I tested to become a police officer, and then I took a hiatus when I realized that I was in policing and I was in patrol for years. I guess I started with my police department in 1997, and I want to say that I went back for my master's degree probably in about 2012-ish, somewhere around there, because again, I wanted to set myself apart from my colleagues, but in a positive way. Then after I graduated with my master's degree, I wanted to do something positive with it. That was when I started teaching as an adjunct instructor at some local colleges and universities. And I was able to encourage and inspire and work with kids, and it was so fulfilling. But again, going back into policing and then going into the school environment, I realized all the good that could be done with school-based policing done properly, done right. And that was when I went back to school to earn my doctorate in public administration. So I would say my educational road has taken quite a bit of time, but it's never too late to go back to school, and you can always work on yourself.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Now, you were given the opportunity, if I remember correctly, you were a police officer and you were starting to feel kind of an unsettled feeling, I'll say, and you got a phone call to be the very first school safety police officer. Can you tell the story? Because I love the story of when that phone call came in. I think you were at Wegmans or something.
It was my day off. I'm wearing black yoga pants and a hoodie sweatshirt. I'm at Wegmans doing my grocery shopping, and my lieutenant sent me a text message. And the message was something to the effect of, "Hey, the school district is thinking about starting this school resource officer position. I really don't know much about it, but I think it'd be a really good fit for you. It would be great for the school, and it would be great for the police department. And we should probably put an asterisk there because I kind of want to come back to that. I don't really know what it's going to involve, but the hours are 7 to 3, 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Are you interested?" And I responded back with way more exclamation points than any grown woman should use when responding to the call. It was like all caps, yes, with all these exclamation points. And I'm holding my phone up in the air because I'm in the grocery store and I want this message to go through. I'm so excited. And of course, the message doesn't go through because why would it when you really want it to go through? And I abandoned my cart and I ran outside so that I could get this message to go through. Oh, and it literally changed the trajectory of my life. It changed who I am as a person. It changed my career. It changed my outlook. Nothing short of becoming a mother has had such a profound effect on me.
Wow. You know what? I was going to ask you this question later in the interview, but you just mentioned being a mom, and I want to know how your job has affected you as a mom. So you're working with children, young students, and as we know today with the news that just came, there's a lot of bad things that happen in the world. How do you separate your role with knowing fully what's taking place and then going home to your own kids?
I don't know that I do. I really don't. If there was one thing, I told you I have imposter syndrome, but there's one thing that I always felt that I excelled at, and that was being a mom. I'm so proud of my kids. I mean, I know everybody's proud of their kids, but that was the one thing where I can hang my hat on that and say, you know what, I'm a good mom. And I treated my kids in school like they were mine. And that's not unique to me, by the way. School resource officers take ownership of their kids as if they're their own. So how did I balance that? That was really difficult because I knew that my kids, my two biological children, had a loving home, a supporting family, food, electricity, some luxury items, but not all kids had that. So when I would come home from work at 3 o'clock, I would never say that I was off duty. I just started round two because oftentimes my afternoons and evenings were spent doing home visits or working with the Office of Children and Youth to go out and make sure that kids were supported and they were in a safe environment and to help to build safety plans. So there did come a time when I was really worried my kids were going to ask me, "How come you keep leaving us for these other kids?"
Oh.
And I was waiting for it because my kids are smart. But I think that they saw how dedicated and devoted I was. And when they knew that there were other kids that didn't have someone to give them a nighttime routine or didn't have someone to say, I love you, or ask how the science project went, or ask what they're excited about for the future, I think they were willing to give me that grace and that latitude to be able to work with other kids.
Beth, did you have any experiences when you were a police officer, any pushback from the male officers? I'm assuming there were not a lot of women doing that job. And if so, how did you deal with that?
Sure. Well, I mean, I started as a female officer in 1997, and I was by far, I was not the first. Don't get me wrong. There were plenty who came before me, and they were some incredibly influential women, and some of them are my mentors and role models. But yes, I was our police department's first full-time female officer, so they didn't really know how to respond to me or what type of officer I was going to be. Or you always roll the dice when you hire someone new, and you wonder if they're going to be a good fit for your department. So the way I treated it was that I had to prove myself. I wasn't wearing a Superman cape, and but I was willing to get involved. I didn't want to be treated differently. I didn't require anything differently, well, except for maybe my own bathroom, but I don't think that was too far out of the ordinary. But I didn't shy away from work. I didn't back away from things. If a volunteer was needed, I offered to fill in. Ultimately, I was reliable and dependable. And that's what I teach my kids. That's how you become successful. Stick to your word, offer to get involved, and let people know through your actions that they can count on you.
That's a great approach, right? Just show, prove by your action, right?
Absolutely.
Same in business. Yeah. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you. I want to talk about what's the day in the life of a school safety coordinator. I'm very curious what you're doing every day. And then what you think the advantages are. Being a woman, how is your approach, your intuition, all those superpowers different in this role from men? We're going to go into our first break. Stay with us for our Watch Team contributors, and we'll be back with Dr. Beth Sanborn.
As a female-led organization, you have to bring it every single day. We're a mashup of sort of right and left brain. So we're not just doing management consulting, we're not just doing creative services, we're not just producing an event, but we're bringing a comprehensive solution to our clients. And because of the way we approach it, we end up being bought into what it is that we're doing in a way that we truly have as much skin in the game as our clients do, whether it's bringing affordable internet to communities across the Caribbean, or it's helping Comcast with their Internet Essentials program, which is something we've been very proud to work on, or it's helping the NFL celebrate their centennial season by getting 1 million people to give at least 100 minutes to causes they care about, or helping the city of Philadelphia win the World Cup. So what's next for us? Well, we just hit just over 100 employees. I think we are at that tipping point, and I don't think there's anybody that does it better than we do. I'm Maggie Wilkinson, CEO of Athena Global Advisors, a company that is proudly based in Philadelphia.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ladies, I'm Tiffany Kurgan, a financial professional with more than 25 years of experience serving successful women, families, and businesses. Here's the reality. You don't have to be the one managing your family's finances to take ownership of your future. But if you want true confidence about how everything is going to play out, you do have to take part in the process. That doesn't mean digging into the weeds of your finances when you don't have the time or desire. It means elevating your awareness of your own circumstances. It means having the bigger conversations so you're empowered when you need to be. Let's bring confidence to your family's future without overwhelming your time. Call myself at 903-520-2709. That's 903-520-2709. Or visit Johnson Financial Group on our website, www.jfg.cc. Not .com, www.jfg.cc.
Hi, I'm Dawn Zier, CEO, board director, and executive mentor to Fortune 500 executives through my work at the EXCO Group, firm of experienced CEOs, board directors, and global business leaders who offer real-world experience to help organizations and senior leaders grow. Today on Leadership Watch, we're going to talk about being in the driver's seat of your career. No matter what stage you're at in your career, you need to grasp that you are in the driver's seat. Understanding from day one that you and you alone are responsible for your career is critical. After all, why would you hand your career over to someone else to manage? There's no one as vested in yourself as you. And the ugly truth is that most managers are focused on execution rather than team development. So how can you ensure that your career stays on track? First, make sure you have a clear set of agreed upon goals that are measurable, and if priorities shift, rewrite them with buy-in. Two, if you see something that can be improved upon or automated, don't wait to be asked, just do it. This is good advice for tech-savvy millennials and Gen Zs who can help lead the way with AI. Three, don't insulate yourself. Get to know other parts of the organization and network both internally and externally. Feel free to drive outside of your lane. And four, while your career is yours to own, don't go it alone. Identify sponsors and mentors. Also, it's important to make self-reflection and self-assessment a habit. Think through where you want to be 5 years from now and create a roadmap for yourself. Does your current path get you there? Are you passionate about what you're doing? Do you feel challenged? Are you learning? Do you feel respected? And importantly, are you a cultural fit? And is the company a cultural fit for you? If you answer negative to any of these questions, it's likely time for some course correcting. Please follow me on LinkedIn at Dawn Zier. And if you're a senior executive looking to grow in your career, check out expoleadership.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. I'm joined this week by Dr. Beth Sanborn. And Beth is the school safety coordinator for Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Big job, I would say, particularly in these times. And I was curious if you feel or recognize that there are different skills that women bring to this particular job from men, and if so, what they are. You know, it might be in your dealing with students and young people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a big part of it is delivery and how you approach it. With a background in law enforcement, I feel as if I can relate to, and I speak the language of law enforcement. So one of those hurdles is already removed for me. But then after I earned my doctoral degree, I also speak the language of education. So educators then respect that degree. So I have the ability to communicate with both entities using the proper language with both of them. And I think if you are able to speak with a particular industry and language that they understand, you're able to then communicate a message with less complication. What I've done is I've changed the way I deliver a message to be able to speak in the language of education and then also in a softer manner. But here's the thing. I've spent my entire life in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. I have worked my entire career in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. I'm really proud of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. I volunteer here. I work here. I live here. My kids go to school here. I have a reputation that hopefully for the better precedes me, so that when I do go to these schools, it's not the first time that they're meeting me. But even if it is, I make sure that I handle myself well and appropriately, and I offer something to my hosts, whether it's bringing safety equipment, whether it's offering my assistance, whether it's sharing my cell phone number or sharing resources. I'm happy as long as our schools are safe and protected and we're working together.
Can you tell me, you know, this is not a very original question, but I'd love to know a typical day. What are you doing in this role? And how much are you with parents and how much are you with students?
So believe it or not, in the capacity of this role, I'm actually removed from the individual schools more than I have ever been before. So Montgomery County, I believe, is the third largest county in Pennsylvania. So I have approximately 400 to 450 school buildings. So that's 22 public school districts. And then there's private schools and religious schools, nonprofit institutions, higher ed. And I'm responsible for all of those. So what we did after we accumulated a list of all of my contacts, what I start to do is I look at legislation. I look at directives that are coming out and requirements, and I start to push those out to my key stakeholders in my schools. I'm always looking for things to help take the safety and security mindset away from the administrators, because there's so much noise in this industry. So if I can quiet some of the noise and just send them the applicable information, I feel that how could they be disappointed in that? If my communication eliminates 15, 20, 30 emails that they have waiting for them, whether it's a project that's going to be pitched or whether it's a product that they're trying to get you to invest in, if I can help eliminate and weed that out, you can get back to the business of education and truly supporting our kids. So allow me to work in my field so that I can help you in yours.
So you're in an office setting most of the time and perhaps working, you know, via computer research, turning around and sharing this information.
The best days are when I get to work in person with my schools. So when I first started this position and I emailed everyone, I said, I want to be the popular girl. I want my calendar so full that I have to decide where to go. So invite me to fire drills, invite me to school safety drills, invite me to your school safety meetings, to your parent forums, invite me to everything. And when I started showing up, and schools realized I wasn't kidding, I said, I'm here to support you. Again, my actions are reflecting those words. So today I had the opportunity to provide situational awareness training and then assist with Stop the Bleed training to our private schools and our religious schools in Montgomery County. We set up two different sessions so that they could come here into Plymouth Township or Conshohocken. And they came here and we ran a training. They got a certificate for Stop the Bleed. We have some Stop the Bleed kits that Montgomery County purchased on a grant that we'll be able to distribute. And it's a really odd world that we live in these days. But if I can help make my schools safer, whether it's through education or programming or equipment, I'm going to do it.
Beth, I would love to know your perspective on whether you're hopeful. You know, living in this time where we have to be so concerned about the safety of students in school, we did not grow up that way. There was never a concern. And I think often about the anxiety level of students having to have that worry in the back of their mind. Do you see a time when it would revert back? I mean, that's a big question. It has a lot to do with mental illness and, right, there's so many things. It's a very complex topic, but I just would love your perspective on if you think there will be a time where we don't have to worry so much.
Yeah, that is complex. There is no easy answer for that. I'm going to tackle a couple different pieces of that. I am a huge proponent for school resource officers. Those are sworn law enforcement officers who are hired by a municipality to work in conjunction with a school district, and they adhere to community policing standards. But in order to have a successful program, You have to have the right person. Remember that asterisk that I mentioned when my lieutenant sent the text message? You need someone who's carefully selected, because you can't just put any random police officer in a school. It won't work. If you're squeamish around teeth, you probably shouldn't be a dentist. If you don't like feet, don't be a podiatrist. But you need to have the right person in there. They need to be very specifically trained, because policing in a school is very different than policing in the streets. And if you do it wrong, there could be dire consequences. And then that person also needs to be properly equipped to be able to do their job. And while I am a huge proponent for school resource officers because of the good work that we do, we're not the only answer. There is a huge mental health crisis and epidemic that's affecting our kids. And by the way, our parents too.
Correct. The parents are anxious about the kids being anxious.
Absolutely. So we have to work together. That being said, when you combine a school resource officer with a nurse, with a crisis counselor, with a social worker, with security technology, and all of these parts are working together, there's still one piece that's missing. Communication. We have to stop this fear of talking to each other. We have to be able to communicate with each other so that we can identify when a kid might be approaching a crisis, so that we can intervene before the crisis is reached. And if we're all so bound by this fear of talking with each other, and what am I disclosing, and what am I sharing, and what if it comes back to haunt me? Well, think of it in the other perspective. What if you knew that there was a kiddo that was struggling, but you didn't feel empowered enough to use your voice and say something, and something catastrophic happens?
Yes, that is really important. And people do need to feel like they can. There should be no judgment around, you know, bringing something like that to light. I want to talk, you wrote a book.
I did.
You have a book, The Missing Piece, Your School Resource Officer as an Ally in Parenting. Who is that? When you wrote that book, who did you have in mind?
So I want to use my voice as much as I can across different audiences to let folks know who school resource officers are. So really, anyone who has a kiddo in the school system, or who's curious about what happens in the school system, or wants to know more about school-based policing. So I wrote this book to be able to share who we are, how we make our decisions, how we're trained, the extensive level of training that gets involved, how we interact with our kids and what that looks like on daily interactions, but then even more so to show how our kids interact with us. I think far too often when we're talking about education in the school system, we forget to give our kids a voice. We have these egos where we know what's best for our children, but aren't we raising them so that they can become the future leaders, so that they can figure out their voice? Ask them what their opinions are. Ask what their concerns regarding school safety are, or where do they see are the vulnerable points, or what's on their mind? What are they worrying about?
When you look, this is my last question for you. Do you feel as, when you look at the trajectory of your career, do you feel as though you are where you're meant to be?
I wouldn't change a single thing.
You love your work.
I hate getting out of bed in the morning. I am not a morning person, but I love getting to work.
That's happy. Yeah, that's a wonderful thing to be able to say. You're doing really important work. And I just want to, you know, commend you for your energy and optimism around this work, because I think it makes the students that you're interacting with feel so much better about it.
I love it. I feel like every student deserves to have an Officer Beth. Every school needs to have a school resource officer, someone who's trained, who loves their kids, who wants to help see them succeed. You know, we all have different definitions of success. Our kids are no different. So if we can help them reach their definition of success, no matter what road they take to get there, and see them off to graduation and beyond, and continue those proactive, positive relationships that extend well beyond the school building and generationally, in fact, then our kids, our community, all of us will be much better off.
I think you're probably inspiring a lot of young women to get into law enforcement.
I hope so.
Thank you so much, Beth, for taking time to be with me and share a little bit about your life story, and good luck with everything that's going to come after.
Thank you.
Stay with us as we go into our last break. You'll hear from our corporate partners, and I'll be back to close out the show.
Over on our Women to Watch YouTube channel, we have a partner profile series featuring some of the amazing executive women working at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Our latest installment features Dr. Susan Firth. Here's an excerpt from our latest conversation. The goal, I would say, of CHOP is for every child to have a chance at a healthy future. And how does the Research Institute specifically support and help in that goal?
One of our strategic imperatives as an enterprise is to really promote research-driven precision medicine, you know, so diagnostics and therapeutics that are really tailored to an individual's circumstance. And I always add to that research-driven precision medicine that this has to be research-driven precision medicine for everyone. So we've invested in programs around health equity research methods and making sure that as we are pursuing our research and discovery, that we're thinking about how our questions apply to different populations, whether it's where they live, if they're rural or urban, or what their social determinants of health are. So we're trying to incorporate thinking broadly about improving child health to all populations. So we want to help children who are around the world and also in our backyard.
To learn more about Dr. Susan Firth, head over to our Women to Watch YouTube channel for the full interview.
We are CHOP, and we can't wait to show you around. We're the nation's first children's hospital. Now, a care network with more than 50 locations that continues to expand. 3 state-of-the-art research buildings with 1.5 million square feet of space. We have grown from 12 beds 165 years ago to nearly 600 beds and one of the best children's hospitals in the world. We have a level 1 trauma center, 11 floors of patient units, more than 20 operating rooms, first-of-its-kind delivery unit for babies with birth defects, a separate cardiac operative and catheterization suite, and places to learn, like our internationally recognized simulation center. We have trained generations of leaders in the field of pediatrics. We are world leaders in medicine, surgery, and science. One of the top recipients in NIH funding for pediatric research. In this building, pioneers in CAR T therapy, mitochondrial disease, brain tumors, hyperinsulinism, and other rare diseases. Here, groundbreaking work in fetal surgery, genetics and genomics, and neurology. In our newest building, leaders in social determinants of health, clinical informatics and epidemiology, autism, trauma and injury prevention. Our patients come from every state and 115 countries. Meeting these challenges requires the best and the brightest. We are passionate about pediatrics. We are motivated to make a difference in the world and in our community. We are a team. We are CHOP.
That's it, everyone, for another week of Women to Watch. Thanks so much for being with me. Next week, my guest will be Janet Fouty. And Janet is a former CEO of Deloitte, Deloitte Consultancy Division. And she's spending her time now in research for healthcare with women. Thank you, as always, to our sponsors for helping us to bring you the show each and every week. And I'll see you next week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.